If a werewolf goes to a planet without a moon, will it ever transform? Are flies just tiny birds? Answers to these questions and more on this episode of
This Paranormal Life!
Hello and welcome back to This Paranormal Life. This is a comedy podcast where every Tuesday we investigate a different tale, claim, or beast, or demon, or animal we've never seen or heard of before and decide whether it's paranormal or not. Plot twists, most of the time it's not, but sometimes it is, and that's why we're here every single week, sorting the wheat from the chaff. My name's Kit Grimalvenna. This guy's Roy Powers across from me, my co-investigator. How are you doing today, Roy?
I'm doing fantastic. Yesterday was my first day out of quarantine. I'd been quarantining for 10 days, and I'm out, baby. I'm back.
I was worried for a second that you were going to say quarantining since March 2020 or something. I heard it was safe. I came outside for the first time.
I'm ready.
And boy, it is bright. How does it feel to be out?
Feels fantastic.
I mean, you have gone back inside a dungeon to record this.
It does feel a little sad to be out for
and one day. And we actually have a lot to make up on recording too. So you're not leaving for 12 days?
Yeah, quite a few. We're going to be back in the dungeon. But yeah, it was nice. I went out yesterday. You know, went out and had some pizza, which was delicious. Couldn't taste it, of course. I don't know what's going on there. And I had this friggin' cough that was driving me nuts,
okay,
too.
Okay, you need to... We need to stay in now for this.
And if we could get through this, that would be really great, because I feel like shit today,
okay,
frankly.
Oh, my God.
And I thought it was going to be fine, but it's like, it's been getting worse, and it's good to be outside, but it also, like... It's also just like...
But it also... Cough? That's what you have to say? I knew you were going to cough when you said, but it's also...
I just can't... It's hard to put sentences together because I can't, like, taste or smell anything.
Yeah, you mentioned that.
And
which is one of the most famous symptoms of COVID-19.
Is it?
Yeah.
Because on the phone where they were like... The NHS called me and they were like, have you done any tests? And I said, yeah, negative. And I think they took that as like my tests were negative, but I was like, nope.
But you didn't say nope. You said,
no, said negative.
Right. You use the word that usually means I'm healthy.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And then she was like, are you sure? And I said positive. So there was some confusion. Granted, that was a poor choice of words. Now that I think
you
about
were looking
it.
At the test when you said positive. Me, this is a bit of a change to how I thought this episode was going to go, but to be honest, we're here now, we might as well finish the episode and then, I don't know, go to an ICU, I think. I don't feel well. In today's investigation, it's September 29th, 1903 in Van Meter, Iowa. It's 1 a.m, and implement dealer U.G. Griffith is sound asleep in bed. Implement dealer means he is in the business of farm equipment.
That's really, thank you for clarifying that.
You thought it was weed?
I didn't know why. I had no clue what that was.
Only around 1,000 people live there today, but in the early 1900s, the population is just shy of 400. Residents are used to a quiet life, so U.G. Griffith is pissed when he's awoken by a bright light in the middle of the night.
Here we go. You said it was, at the time, it was only 400 people that lived there?
Yep.
Now, bear in mind that populations of towns were a lot like the contrast in the value of money.
Mm.
So in olden days, a dollar was like $1 million in today's money.
I think that checks out.
So an old-timey town that had 400 residents is like New York City. This is a metropolis.
Yeah, there were just less people on Earth. So
this was like a hustling, bustling...
A nuclear family of four... That was like the population of Amsterdam.
Yeah, exactly.
You could buy a house for a quarter.
What in the hell?
He's not going to stand for this. He's got implements to deal in the morning. Not wanting to yell out the window and wake up both the other residents of the town, he pulls on his boots and heads out into the street. He's furious, muttering to himself,
some dumb kid's found himself a spotlight, huh? Wants to mess with my sleep, huh? I'll show him.
A spot? I thought it was 1903. Did they have spotlights then?
I guess so.
Maybe they did.
They had cars though, right? So they must have had lights.
Yeah, maybe. Back then, maybe it was two candles in the front of your car.
load up cartimeline.com. We need to get to the bottom of this. He sees the source of the light perched on top of a house and strides up to it, ready to unleash the scolding of a lifetime. He's blinded by the beam, but squinting up, he can just about make out a vast and terrifying shape.
That's no kid!
Whatever's holding this blazing torch is enormous, but it's shining so bright, Griffith can barely keep his eyes open. Suddenly, the creature leaps high into the air in the blink of an eye.
Whoa!
It clears Main Street in one jump, landing on a house on the other side of the street. Griffith can't believe how fast it had traveled. He's never seen anything like this before. He's frozen on the spot, eyes fixed on the grotesque silhouette. But as quickly as it had hopped across the street, it slips away into the dark night.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are looking at some sort of intergalactic frog.
Yeah, that's right, everyone. It's the Loveland Frogman Part 2. He's moved to Iowa from Ohio.
He's back.
He didn't move very far, sure, in the scheme of Earth. Ohio got too hot. Too many people were looking for the almond-eating frogman. So he's moved to Iowa. Yeah, maybe.
Who knows?
It's an intergalactic frog. We do not know. All he saw was, quote-unquote, a vast and terrifying shape in the darkness.
Wow.
Griffith heads back to bed, trying to convince himself he's dreaming, sleepwalking, or straight up hallucinating. But it would soon become clear that this is just the first of a flurry of sightings of what would go on to be called the Van Meter Visitor.
Ooh, I like the ambiguity there. The visitor.
Not a lot to go on.
Yeah.
With that name.
We're usually one for specifics. The frogman.
The donkey lady.
Yeah. Very specific descriptions of the creature. So when you throw something out there like the visitor, now that's cool. That's very cool.
It actually implies nothing and yet quite a lot. It also implies that they came and dipped.
Yeah, right. They didn't stick around. I like this. I like it a lot. So it's a lot scarier sounding than some of the creatures we've investigated in the past.
Absolutely. Everyone knows when you watch a horror movie that the boring bit is when they reveal the monster at the very end. It's the Scooby-Doo ripping off the mask. Once you can see it and touch it and feel it with your own hands, it's not as scary anymore. It's worse if it sneaks up behind you, says boo, and then vanishes.
You never even see that
thing.
You
don't know if you've even gone crazy or if it was real.
Terrifying.
The following night's events would happen to someone else. The town's medic, Dr. Alcott, is roused by a blinding light outside his... It's also bad. If your town is so small, it just has a medic, not a doctor.
Yeah.
A guy who knows the f***ing recovery position. And maybe if CPR, if you're lucky.
Yeah, it's all... There's no preventative action being taken place. It's only someone who can deal with all the problems.
Yeah.
No one to prevent any of them.
It's basically a PE teacher with a first aid kit. It's what you're dealing with here. Yeah, if you go to them with high blood pressure, good luck.
Yeah, it's not going to help. All he has is a suitcase of morphine and a big cartoon hammer to bonk you on the head with before an operation.
That's right. Dr. Alcott is roused by a blinding light outside his window and goes out to investigate. It is true. You make a good point. I guess they wouldn't have had very sophisticated lights back then. So a light, not a lot of blinding lights. Even nowadays, if a laser beam comes in through your window, you're just like, some kid has got a laser pen and they're flying around the place.
Yeah.
Granted, a torch coming through your living room window would be a lot scarier.
Yeah, unless, I don't know, presumably that's what it's like living in downtown Los Angeles. Right. Police helicopters and searchlights hovering
over.
Yeah,
open up, let me in. We've got a search warrant. Whereas, I've heard it all before.
Yeah, if I was just sleeping in my apartment and a spotlight came in through the windows, I would think I'm getting Scrooged. I would think that three ghosts are now going to visit me and tell me to stop being such a little bastard.
I mean, at the same time, I have told you about... the simply inordinate amount of police helicopters that circle my flat on a daily basis.
Right.
We live like relatively close to each other. You don't get this very much, right?
No, I don't.
And you live in also a lot busier area than I do. But every single night, dozens of police helicopters descend on my street.
I don't know why we live four streets apart, and yet I'm on an Animal Crossing island, and you're in GTA Vice City.
It's f***ed up. It's actually f***ed up when you're trying to sleep and police helicopters are circling you.
Because you do all that dog fighting as well in the basement, so you're always kind of on edge anyway.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
like, and they're just like out looking for petty criminals and stuff, and you're sweating bullets.
Yeah, dog fighting, street racing.
Yeah. Sorry, I should clarify, because I think that painted you in a bad light. You don't make dogs fight each other. You fight the dogs. That's what it was. I feel like some people thought maybe you made dogs fight. That's not okay. Kit fights the dogs.
Yeah. So the first rule of Fight Club is don't whiff about it. Yeah, I've been doing it for a couple of years. It's like, I just tell people it's like MMA or something. It's like niche, but like it's going to be big, you know? I think I could be the Conor McGregor of that sport.
I'd say you maybe have to work your way up a little bit more.
I'd have to win at least one match, which I haven't done.
And they're small dogs, I want everyone
to
know that.
They're not big. I'm quite worried about my first bout with a Border Terrier because the Chihuahuas nearly made me f***ing infertile. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, I came around the other day to podcast and a Pomeranian had you in a headlock.
Paws are so small.
It was almost incredible because for it to even lock your head with its little arms was incredibly
impressive. I
tried
to take it down and I got like a mouthful of dog hair and I couldn't breathe for the rest. I think the dog won by default because I blacked out so early.
So don't feel bad for the dogs either, because they're pretty much running the show. They almost have a human fight club where they just take turns beating up Kit in his own basement.
And people always say the dogs always win. It must be rigged. But I organize the fights. I'm the promoter. So it's not rigged. It's rigged against me, if anything. So if you see me walking around East London, top off, flabby abs, not at all like Brad Pitt, but walking six dogs under the guise of a dog walking business, that's actually what I'm up to.
Yeah, the door is open, by the way, all the time. The dogs can leave whenever they want, but they kind of like get off on beating up Kit now.
So it's their playtime.
More dogs have joined since the fighting league started rather than more have left.
I cannot stress enough to recap. Dr. Alcott is roused by a blinding light outside his window and goes to investigate. But unlike Eugene Griffith, he has the sense to grab his shotgun on the way out of the door. As soon as he sets his foot outside, there the creature is on a rooftop. It's 8 feet tall easily.
Blast him!
Something about it looks strangely human, except it has...
Hold fire! I was a little fast there.
It has a set of huge leathery wings.
Blast him!
He realizes the light is coming from what looks like a horn on its head. Remembering there's a weapon in his hands, he takes his chance to open fire. He takes 5 shots in total. This must be a semi-automatic pump action.
It better be, otherwise he's reloading.
Yeah, again, this is not the behavior of someone I would want to save my life. He's getting phone call after phone call to come to people who are ill down the street. I've got a John Wick-style shootout to attend first, sorry. At first, he thinks he's missing the target, but for the last few, he sees his bullets make contact. They just aren't doing anything. The doctor's whole body floods with fear, and he runs home and slams the door behind him.
If you're unloading 5 shotgun shells into an 8-foot creature and it's not even phased, you best hope you saved a couple shells for yourself, because that thing's not coming down and it's gonna tear you to shreds if it gets its hands on you.
That's why the shotgun's a bold choice, because it's a hard one to turn on yourself when you need to in a sort of cryptid man battle.
Right, you would almost have to take your shoe off and use your feet to kind of try and pull the trigger.
If one needed to. The next day, everyone's talking about it. Rumors are circling and people are scared.
I heard it's 20 feet tall.
Well, I heard it picked Griffin up and shook him like a dog.
It isn't long until these panicked whispers fall on the ears of local badass Clarence Dunn. He's a logical man and knows that there's nothing strange going on here. It's probably a clever gang of robbers trying to lure the entire town out of their homes at night. Or worse, they're headed for the town vault.
The town vault?
But Clarence is a rebel with a cause. This is his town, and if anyone's going to be creeping around in the middle of the night, it's going to be him. He decides to wait up and keep watch to solve the mystery once and for all. He pitches up at the bank in the middle of town, his trusty shotgun at his side. If any bandits try and make their way in, he'll be ready.
This got really Red Dead really fast.
I mentioned to Rory right before we started recording that this town is perched on the side of Raccoon River.
Yeah.
So it's a real strong Western time and place vibes. In history. Hours pass with no disturbance, but the eerie silence is broken by a violent strangling sound. Clambering to his feet and grabbing for his shotgun, Clarence staggers towards the door. Before he can get there, he's struck with a paralyzing beam of light. Try as he might, he can't move. It's as if his shoes have been nailed to the floorboards. Without warning, the blazing light dims, and Clarence sees what he later described as some kind of great form behind the light. He's scared and confused, but is regaining his faculties. He realizes he's mere meters from the monster, raises his gun, and shoots it right from where he's standing, nice, shattering the window of the bank. Clarence hadn't believed Dr. Alcott's story about a fearsome creature impervious to bullets, but it was standing before his very eyes. But only for another moment. Just like the two previous nights, it vanishes without a trace as he watches.
Whoa. There's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah, what do you make of that if you were Clarence?
It's interesting he was hit by the beam of light and frozen on the spot like it's some kind of freeze ray. I'd like to know if it was because of the light that he was paralyzed, or is this kind of like a total shock.
Headlights.
Yeah. Like frozen on the spot, can't believe what I'm seeing kind of ordeal. Because he gets his hands on the shotgun pretty fast for someone who's completely paralyzed.
Yeah. It's really hard to know, isn't it? I mean, we do have to remember, like, even though we have now been through the eyes of a couple different people who've experienced this, Clarence thought there was a team of bandits in the town up until about 30 seconds ago.
Yeah.
So, if this is what I was confronted with for the very first time, knowing nothing about it, I would probably be frozen to the spot.
You were warned, Clarence! You were warned very descriptively of what this thing was. The audacity for people to tell their stories, and you go, nah, I think it's bandits. And then that same night, an 8-foot light beast comes at your front door, and you're like, who could have foresaw this? Better shoot it. No one's tried that before.
I know Clarence talking to the police after the fact's like, I guess in retrospect, I'm shocked but not surprised on account of being told every single detail of the previous encounters.
Even the bullets not having any effect. I wonder if they're kind of bouncing off the creature like Superman, or if they're just phasing through it like it doesn't even exist.
I mean, yeah, that's a great point. I love that detail of this story where he shoots the thing at point-blank range, but all that happens is the window of the bank smashes into pieces. It feels like a moment from James Bond when he's running around the funhouse of mirrors.
Oh, yeah.
And he's, like, trying to catch the villain, but it's, like, it's all smoke and mirrors. He can't see where they are.
Yeah.
And it's as if this beast is playing him using the glass.
You run in, all the lights go on, and he's, like, he's got the gun, and he's looking at all the mirrors, and you just hear, like, you think you know what's real and what's not? Well, this is Batman now. You think you know what's real and what's not, Batman. But I think that you'll find that illusion plays a big part in our society today. Of course, in those movies, he never shoots the right person first.
No.
He always gets a couple mirrors down, you know.
Always a couple down, and then right when you're least expecting it, the Joker, let's face it, appears right behind him and he can't see it.
And grabs him by the throat. Or he's got the gun pointed at what he thinks is a mirror, and then the mirror just goes, and
that's,
jumps
out. Oh, perfect.
It writes itself.
It really writes itself. It really does. So I love that. I love this creature's commitment to cinema.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a real, like, if you're gonna be a night beast, You might as well do some theatrics.
Yeah, 100%. Although I would love to see the version where Batman goes to the Hall of Mirrors. He's got the gun ready and it's just the Joker going, "You see, illusions are something that you don't understand, Batman." And that
I got you now.
Oh!
How did you see me?
It's not that deceptive. You're right in front of me. I could feel your breath on my skin. You know how sound works, right? Like, I can hear that you're right in front
There's
of
only
me.
One mirror as well. One big mirror. That, or you shoot the mirror, it ricochets and gets him in the nuts.
I mean, it's wild that the vault is a thing, that this is a thing. Where did that come from?
Booty is kept in one vault.
Yeah, one big treasure chest that this paranormal beast is gonna Ocean's 11 this vault.
I think it's I know it sounds a bit wild, but I think it is a thing, right? Back in the day, small town, there'd only be one bank probably.
I guess.
And it's all physical cash, so
keep all your goods in it.
Yeah.
I mean, I would 100% watch a movie where a small group of paranormal creatures team up to rob a casino.
Right.
Where they're like,
cryptid Ocean's 11.
Yeah, they're like, "Chupacabra, you need to enter the vents at this location
right,
and drop down right when Goatman."
Abilities.
Yeah, yeah, you got everyone there. Spring Heel Jack, you need to launch yourself onto the top of the building. There will be a helicopter pad. Get ready for the donkey lady to breach the walls.
Loch Ness Monster just...
There's like a stream that goes into the building. If not, I don't know, just like take five because we don't actually know why you're here. Do you need human money? Loch Ness Monster, do you need human money? I don't know how you work. He doesn't speak, of course. No, he doesn't speak any language. He's underwater. Yeah. Awesome. Can anyone translate? Anyone know what that means?
Springheel Jack, you know, we need you to do your stuff, but please do not throw any acid in anyone's face. That's not a cool cryptid thing to do. It's just illegal.
We could have got a human to do that if we wanted someone to do that. So don't. Only the men, I see. No acid in nobody's face.
Clarence sinks to the floor, his heart pounding. He can't process what he's just seen. All he wants to do is get to the safety of his own bed, but he's pretty shaken up. Not to mention, he should really watch over the bank until morning, as he's just busted the window wide open, and bandits could really run in and take the whole thing. He's a bandit, not.
At this point, yeah.
After a few hours of nightmare-riddled sleep, he steps outside to greet the new day. There on the ground outside the bank, beneath the shell casings and shards of glass, are huge three-toed footprints.
Oh boy.
Forgetting all about the security of the town's money, he bolts home to grab a pot of plaster so he can make a cast of these things. Just a day ago, he had brushed this whole thing off as an elaborate prank. He knows he needs proof if anyone sensible is going to believe him. Rory, I would love to show you an image of these casts, but it was better than physical evidence. Sometimes it's just like using your imagination.
Hearsay.
Because we can really like f***ing VR dive into the time and place using our minds and kind of just
usually I
picture
would,
it.
Usually I'd be more upset, but look, it's 1903, I believe you said. I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. That is a long time ago.
This is a guy who just broke into a bank to fight a night beast with a shotgun.
Yeah, I don't trust him with any possessions.
And yeah, he's not, he wasn't uploading this shit to like Wikipedia.
Who allowed him to do this? Who gave him the okay to be the one to do this?
When your local badass Clarence Dunn, you get to do what you want.
Because even when the beast came and went, he just slept in the bank, having constant nightmares until he woke up, presumably shotgun in hand.
Does he have a job? Does he have a job? What does he do? Why is he local badass?
I wish that was a profession, but I don't think it is.
Yeah, this is dangerously close to the actions of John Marston from Red Dead Redemption.
He needn't have bothered trying to prove it to anyone, because that week the creature pops up all over the place. The town is incapacitated with terror. O.V. White, the owner of the hardware store, takes a shot at it when he sees it asleep at the top of a telephone pole.
Asleep?
Well, it's tuckered on account of spending all night haunting the villagers.
On the top of a telephone pole? I thought this thing was huge.
It's a really, well, it is, but it's a real bird-like thing to do, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's right. You said it had wings, to be fair. Okay. Mm.
The air suddenly fills with a disgusting, sour smell. White thinks it must be a defense mechanism like a skunk,
and it smells beyond terrible. His neighbor isn't far behind and catches up with the mysterious visitor as it's climbing down the pole. He aims his gun at it, but it takes flight before he can pull the trigger.
Guns don't work.
But as we all know from all military action movies, people with guns tend to not take it on face value or on your word that guns don't work. They're like, nah, bro, not my gun, though.
Sure, yeah.
You're a wimpy little gun? Sure. But me with my Barrett 50 cal sniper rifle? I'm going to take this thing down, best believe.
Also, there's something strange about shooting it. Anything paranormal or not while it's asleep,
it that feels really like feels wrong.
Yeah, like even if you were killing the devil, you'd want to at least wake him up first.
Yeah, and it say feels... bye bitch and pull the trigger.
Yeah. Hey Satan, hey, I'm gonna kill you, but I want you to be awake because this oh shit. He's awake for 2 seconds, turns you into a frog. I should have taken the rabbit shot. Fuck. You know what I mean? It seems wrong. Even if, like, I don't know.
It's like
Captain America. If he snuck up and strangled Thanos in his sleep, that feels bad. I know it's good, but it feels bad. It doesn't feel very patriotic. It doesn't feel very American.
You're right. Give that job to, I don't know, Hulk or someone who isn't the like propaganda guy.
Yeah, yeah.
The guy in the front of the magazine.
Himself.
Yeah.
Even if you like gathered a town meeting the next day and you were like, I fucking got him. I cut off his head here. And everyone's like cheering. They're like, yes. Like, how did you do it? And you're like, you're never going to guess. He was asleep in a little bush, I think, like nursing its children or whatever, and I just put the barrel of my gun in its mouth and blew its brains out. There's gonna be a lot of people who are like, that's not okay. I know it was giving us a lot of trouble, but I think you're the animal for doing that. I think we need to put you down. Yeah, this feels, I don't know, something about it feels kind of cowardly. It's like in the movies where they capture King Kong. You know, he's a bad gorilla. Sure. He's pretty. he's pretty violent. I think he eats everything he can get his little monkey
but
hands on.
But that's not why they take him to New York City, is
that's
it?
That's too far. That was this is the part where they go too far. Is sure, you know, whatever. Deal with him whatever way you need to, but don't take him to New York City. Freak him out. Flash
I haven't watched
him.
King Kong in so many years. Was the premise of the movie they had to capture him because he was eating everything?
Jesus, I don't remember.
I don't think King Kong did anything wrong. I think they just found a giant monkey.
You might be right now. Yeah, because I think the
wasn't
new one
eating all the world's bananas.
Yeah, I think in the new one they're filming a movie on Skull Island and there's a giant monkey and then they're like, you know how much money we could get if we show people this monkey?
Do you know how many bananas we'd save if we put this thing in a cage and feed him oatmeal instead? This thing takes flight into the air. It flies over the whole town and the men chase after it, partly to see where it goes and also to get away from the stench. They reach the outskirts.
Where'd the stench come from?
The beasts.
It smells?
Yep.
Wow, okay. That's new.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Ovi White, he said he thought it might be a defense mechanism like a skunk.
Oh, right. Oh, God, that's not good.
Yeah. I mean, a deadly beast is bad enough without a stinky deadly beast. The men reach the outskirts of the town and see the beast heading away at speed before descending.
It's going to the old coal mine. Oh, we got you now, you son of a bitch.
The two men hatch a plan over the next few days. All the while, people living near the abandoned mine start hearing sinister sounds emanating from the old shafts. After the event, a newspaper quotes them saying the sounds were as though Satan and a regiment of imps were coming forth for a battle.
Oh my God.
That's bad.
That's very descriptive.
And at that point, you're thinking back to 5 years ago when you bought that house near the old mine and everyone said, don't do it. The real estate value will tank in years to come. The mine can't keep going forever. They'll have to shut down the mine and you'll be living next to a mine. And you said, no, the views are great and the house is big and spacious. There you go.
Now you got to deal with this.
Satan's army of imps coming for you.
I mean, at this point, you block up the mine, right? Like dynamite the entrance and just seal it off and starve the thing.
Miners still inside. There's no time. As word gets out, a fair few of the local men volunteer their monster hunting services. With enough men and heavy artillery on their side, they can't lose. So out they go to the outskirts of town, prepared to slay the beast or die trying. The angry mob is in a frenzy as they reach the hilltop overlooking the mines. But their bloodlust turns to fear when they see the visitor is at the mine's entrance, and it's not alone.
My God, it's real. And look, there's another one.
It's accompanied by a similar creature, but it's much smaller. No one knows what to do. They're all just standing there, confused. As they slowly come to their senses, someone shouts,
"Get him!"
The men charge forward as one, guns ablazing. But in a move everyone should have predicted, the visitor and what seems to be its child take flight and escape.
Now what?
Now we wait. There's nothing on earth a bullet can't kill. That doctor and Clarence are probably terrible shots. When those things get back here, we blast them. Plain and simple.
Why does no one have faith in the person who saw the thing before they did?
You have no more tools. It's 1903. You have no more tools to deal with this thing. There's no bloody doctor, for one. There's no police. There's no military.
One guy saw it, and he was like, it's an 8-foot night bird. The next person is like, well, I don't think it is. And then he sees it, and it's like, it's an 8-foot night bird, yeah. And I shot it, and it didn't work. And then the next guy goes, well, I think you missed with that shot.
I think it's bandits, yeah. And I'm going to stake out the old bank. I don't know why the beast ever came to the bank, by the way.
Yeah, that doesn't make a lot of sense.
That was kind of a good guess on the part of the Clarence.
Yeah, he didn't even go for the vault at all.
I don't know. We live in an age of stupidity today, and this is 120 years later. It's pretty fair to believe that this was also an age of stupidity.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't surprise me at all. To them as well, I mean, guns were so fresh, they were like lightsabers to those people, laser guns. They were like, this is the future of war. What are you telling me? A bullet isn't going to kill this thing. We just found out about these things.
Someone today a nuke won't do the job.
Yeah, it's like, what do you mean?
You can nuke it all you want. It won't make a dent. Well, I feel like you didn't hit it with the nuke or your nuke was a dud.
I've seen Billy's nukes. They're weak and they're tiny.
It destroyed Canada. Billy's nukes destroyed Canada. It wasn't weak.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So the men hunkered down, and after hours in the cold, the men are stirred by the faint sound of beating wings.
Here they come! Get ready!
The men stick to their plan, but the creatures are unharmed. They can't believe it. Whatever these things are, they are totally immune. Ignoring the onslaught completely, the pair of beings make their way into the cave and out of sight. At this point, the guys are tired and getting ratty, and one of them has an idea.
If it involves a gun, I'm leaving right now.
Nobody even uses this place anymore. Let's just seal it up and go home.
Yes, boys.
Genius. Thankfully, Mr. White, the hardware store owner, has enough bricks at his disposal to block up the entire entrance. And that's exactly what they do.
Wow.
That was the last time the visitor was ever seen. Whether the creatures find another way out or were trapped inside forever, we'll never know.
So to this day, the mines remain bricked up?
Is this the only time this has happened in this paranormal life where the townspeople simply buried the cryptid alive?
Yeah, I mean, it must be. I almost respect that, though. That's quite a practical solution, is like, let's just seal it off and hope like another generation will have the technology to be able to deal with this.
Yeah, it's like I often like to reference, it's a bit like dumping Megatron to the bottom of Mariana's Trench. It's like
someone else's problem. It's the shark's problem.
We don't know what to do. Let's figure it out in 200 years.
You just know that civilization would work tirelessly to create some sort of heat-seeking laser cannon to be able to take this thing down. And 300 years later, they remove all the bricks and go into the mine. There's an eagle skeleton in there and an eagle baby skeleton. It was a bird. They missed every shot.
It was an endangered eagle, of course. Yeah. It is quite encouraging for the believability of this story that this thing was such a nuisance and a nightmare, they had to bury it alive.
Yeah, yeah, because it at least proves that, you know, this thing was believed to be real so passionately that the entire town felt that physical action was required to seal it off and trap it. And if there haven't been any sightings since the wall was put up, that's some good evidence right there.
You know, if we had heard that the Great Pyramids of Giza in ancient Egypt were built to contain an evil being, that would be very concerning, because they actually put a lot of effort into the pyramids. So
yeah,
it must have been quite important. So not quite the same scale, but building a giant wall to seal up a mine to keep a beast inside, that's quite creepy, actually.
Yeah, yeah, I really like that. I wish we had taken that approach to more paranormal creatures.
First sighting of the Loveland Frogman.
Trap him in a little cage.
Trap him in a cage.
It's always, yeah, because it's always kill the beast. It's never trap it, you know?
Well, sealing it inside a mine is killing it just over a longer period of time.
Yeah, unless that thing is a rock-eating Goron, it's going to be dead in a fortnight.
So the problem is, we're not sure where this mine is. There's a lot of posts and videos about paranormal activity at an abandoned brick factory in Van Meter, but that a lot of websites say is near the mine, but I've been unable to see with photos the mine itself. Our researcher Amy Grisdale did some digging and found a website that has an interactive map of all the coal mines in Iowa. Now, Van Meter has 4 in total, 3 of which are really near the old brick place. So in theory, if we wanted to go looking, we do have a jumping off point.
So even though one entrance was sealed, there are other entrances where it could have maybe escaped?
No, other mines.
Other mines, okay.
I mean, I don't know, maybe it's possible.
If they're interlinked?
They're connected. That's possible, but it appears to be different mines. Yeah, I guess if one town of 1,000 people has 4, there's a chance the beast buried through and they got out another entrance. But it would be very interesting to know if anyone alive has seen this mine and heard this legend.
Yeah, it's quite a predicament, isn't it? We're kind of stuck in this dilemma where the only way to tell if the creature is real is to open up the mine and risk setting it free once again.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, all right.
It's the Pandora's box for sure.
Exactly. Is it worth the risk of possibly unleashing this thing once again on this small town just to be like, oh yeah, it is real.
Oh, the ancient prophecies were foretold. That's pretty interesting.
Oh, what do you know? Oh yeah, look, it just picked a guy up. Ah!
The guy is unloading shot after shot from his 9mm pistol. It's not doing anything.
It's not going to work, buddy. All the stories are true.
It's the one thing we know. It won't work.
What a dumbass. What an idiot.
Rips his head off. So, we've got to try and establish what we're dealing with in this case. So let's just recap with the powers this thing had to see if anything jumps out at us. It was a 3-toed humanoid being with giant bat wings that could fly and move at incredible speed.
Have we covered anything like this before? Mothman, maybe?
Very interesting. Mothman, giant winged, looks a bit like a human, except for on account of being a giant moth too.
Yeah.
This thing could incapacitate people, render them confused. It had a fucking 100-watt torch on top of its head.
Yeah, I kind of forgot about that.
Bit of a weird one.
It's like a flying lighthouse.
Which is definitely not in the remit of moths, because they like lights. They don't have lights.
Yeah.
So, okay.
You can't. That's too powerful. You can't make a moth that also makes light.
It's like... Yeah, having King Kong, but he grows bananas out of his fingers. It's too powerful. What he wants, he already has. He's unstoppable.
Evolution has stopped that from happening.
It also smelled bad and could seemingly drop a chemical bomb on command. And of course, last but not least, it couldn't be hurt by bullets, even at close range. Now, I struggled to come up with a known cryptid that has every single one of these attributes. So we're going to have to take them one by one and break down what fits. One story this may remind listeners of is the Jersey Devil.
Yeah!
If you can't remember what the Jersey Devil looks like, here's Wikipedia's description. A bipedal kangaroo-like creature with a horse or goat-like head, leathery bat wings, horns, small arms with clawed hands, legs with cloven hooves, and a forked tail.
Bit all over the place, bit mishmash. That was a good episode. I recommend going back and listening to that one if you haven't heard it already.
It's kind of a, you know, NBA All-Star cryptid. It has been reported to move quickly and is often described as emitting a high-pitched, blood-curdling scream.
We're kind of losing it at the hooves, though. The hooves are throwing it. It's a bit of a mishmash.
Yeah. It's got the wings. It's got the speed. It's got the creepy noises. But doesn't have a light. And it's a good bit smaller than the 8 feet that these men said the visitor was.
Yeah.
So when you look through other cryptids, some of them have a passing resemblance. I mean, the Florida skunk ape smells awful. Mothman's got the wings. But whatever visited Van Meter in 1903 isn't an exact match for any of these. Now, maybe the reason we can't think of any known cryptid that matches the description is because it's something we've never seen before. Could it even be from another planet?
Well, they did call it the Visitor, which I liked, implying it's visiting from somewhere.
It also couldn't be hurt by bullets and could move at unbelievable speed and project light. So it kind of seems like cool technology.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean. I think it's just something about it residing in a mine with its child that makes it feel not extraterrestrial.
Feels like an animal. It was also sleeping on a lamppost.
Yeah, that doesn't seem...
An advanced alien wouldn't do, probably.
Because in the stories where we do have someone who is, you know, blinded by a light and paralyzed and they see some sort of creature, usually that creature has arrived and then quite quickly departed in some sort of craft.
Yeah.
It doesn't kind of come down, check out the local bank, have a nap on a telephone pole, go into a mine for a little bit.
Maybe poles are beds to aliens.
Who knows? But I think if it was some sort of intelligent extraterrestrial life, also bricks wouldn't stop it from escaping.
That's true. A laser beam would have cut a hole out of the bricks immediately. Yeah, I like that earlier I heavily foreshadowed that this thing was a visitor because it came and went. It didn't go anywhere. They buried it alive.
It's the opposite of a... Well, I guess it visited and never left. Does that still make you a visitor if you never leave? I guess. Or just makes you a resident, I guess.
Now, the closest match that I could find could be the Thunderbird.
Whoa.
The legendary creature from Native American history.
Zapdos?
It had enormous wings and could flash lightning from its eyes. Now, some people think it's a myth. Others regard it as like a real part of their living culture. Without evidence, it is hard to say. But what if the Van Meter monster counts as evidence of a Thunderbird? And despite being widely considered mythological, there is actually a couple sightings throughout the years of real Thunderbirds. There was one famous sighting. It's called the 1977 Lawndale, Illinois Thunderbird Attack.
Attack?
It was reported that two unidentified birds attacked a young boy on July 25th, 1977. 10-year-old Martin Lowe was playing outside when he was suddenly attacked by two large birds, one of which picked him up and carried him 30 feet before Martin's mother, Ruth Lowe, ran to her son's rescue, chasing the birds away and recovering her son.
Jesus Christ. Are we talking about, like, a large crow here? Or are we talking about, like, a rescuer's down under 40-foot golden eagle?
Several eyewitnesses saw the attack take place. The birds were described as having a white ring around their necks, 4.5 feet long body, with each wing approximately 4 feet long, a 6-inch hooked bill, and 3 front claws, 1 back claw, and a large black body.
Okay, so not too big.
I mean, 4 feet wings either side.
Yeah, not wingspan.
No. So, I mean, wings, once you put in the body and both wings, you're talking about 10 feet wingspan.
That's quite a big bird, isn't it?
I mean, that door right there is probably... This is a big door in the studio. That thing is probably about...
That would be 9 foot, I'd say.
So a wingspan bigger than that could definitely pick up a boy. And it's also too big to be a bird.
Yeah. Because, I mean, look, there are big birds. Sesame Street alone, sure. But I don't know if there's any correlation between the size of birds and their ability to fly or not. Because the whole thing is that birds have... Isn't it that they have hollow bones? Isn't that kind of the reason why they can pretty much fly?
Something like that.
Whereas, like, larger birds, like ostriches...
Yeah.
You know, they can't fly. They're too heavy. So for a creature like this to be that size and still capable of not only flying, but picking up a child and flying.
Yeah, picking up cargo.
Be able to drop a child like a care package. That's paranormal.
I think an albatross is the biggest bird, right? Let me ask Siri here. Hey, Siri, what is the wingspan of an albatross?
Here's an answer from discovermagazine.com. The albatross is one of the world's largest living birds with a wingspan of up to 11 feet across.
Ooh. 11 feet across. Damn.
So that's not far from this creature.
That's basically the same.
Wow, that kind of put a hole in the sail, didn't it?
So here's a picture of an albatross example next to a human.
My God.
That's a bigger bird than Big Bird.
That thing is huge. It looks like, ladies and gentlemen, it looks like a giant seagull. Like, it could pick up a child.
It could easily pick up a child. Weirdly, recently I was in Hastings, south coast of England, checking out the castle and that. Checking out the battle, see if I could find any swords lying about.
Of course, you never know.
And there wasn't any swords. So got bored, went to a little fishing museum they have right there on the seaside. Really cool, just to see all the old, like, fishermen's huts and stuff. And they had an example of an albatross. And it said that albatross are so big and so heavy that if there isn't a breeze, they pretty much can't get off the ground.
Wow.
They can't just flap their wings and get up there. They need, like, a wind to, like, take them.
They need, like... Boeing 737 style, a huge runway basically yeah. Only lift itself off and then
perfect
it's fine.
Conditions.
That's crazy.
So that kind of shows you, isn't it? Like, is that bird, if it could barely fly, you know, without a breeze, is it really picking up a boy and carrying him?
I didn't think about that. Yeah.
Also, I think they only eat fish. I don't think they eat animals on land.
How fishy was this boy? Was he a trout looking motherfucker?
He'd been eating scampi 3 times a day for years. He smelt like a crustacean. His DNA was 80% scampi by the time the bird got him.
I mean, as someone who's grown up on the a lot of coastal towns, I've been straight up attacked by seagulls before. Sure. So I'm no stranger to the violence of birds. Seagulls have smashed into my hands so that I drop my entire meal and a gang of them will come down and grab it. I was bitten by a goose when I was younger, which made me afraid of geese and swans.
Wow.
So I've had a long history of being terrorized by birds. So this hits close to home.
Good thing you didn't Marvel style turn into Goose Man. I mean, just to nip this one in the bud, I will show you a quick artist illustration of what a Thunderbird might have looked like back in the day.
Wow. I mean, Jesus Christ. This isn't what I mean, let's face it. I was picturing Zapdos, the legendary lightning Pokemon. But this is more of like it's a dragon kind of, but with a really long, wormy body.
Mm.
And this thing has a horse in its mouth. So it's definitely pretty big.
And it ain't a pony.
No, this is a full horse. Yeah, what we're talking about is some kind of bird. Can I mention the picture below it? Was I supposed to see that yet? Because that is ridiculous.
Give me it back. Yeah, actually. Yeah, you can.
Okay.
Just need to make sure.
Don't know why Kit stopped me there, because slightly below that picture is another picture of...
Which I think it's quite clear why I would stop you. It's a big departure from the image you just saw.
Yeah. I mean, the first one, sure. It kind of looks like a bat. A giant bat with a crocodile body. This one is a creature from an anime.
It is the power of love and friendship on its side.
It's a pterodactyl with a skull head shooting a laser beam from its eyes.
It's a bit more nuts. Now, that one is wild and terrifying and does, in many ways, fit the description of the Van Meter visitor. Which is interesting because it also looks damn similar to ancient dinosaurs. As the one I'm showing Rory right now, a pterosaur.
I've never seen this dinosaur before.
I think it's a type of like precursor to like, well, certainly a relative to pterodactyls, you know?
Yes.
I think this actually comes before dinosaurs. It's not even technically a dinosaur.
Dude, that's nuts, isn't it? I mean, it's also funny that, you know, to see all these like bird dinosaurs, because as we all know, birds are technically dinosaurs. It's cool to see their early forms still stomping about.
Should be called Kentucky Fried Dinosaurs.
KFD.
So a pretty tough one to crack here, Rory. We've got no cryptids that really match this thing, meaning it's potentially totally unique. We've got maybe a little hint of an ancient Native American mythological creature. And then, even more worryingly, it pretty much the only thing that fits the bill is a 230 million year old dinosaur.
There must be more stories like that of people claiming that they saw extinct creatures.
I feel like that's got to be a whole other episode, right?
Right? Like dinosaur sightings? In 2020 mm-hmm. or 2021, because there's got to be people who have just been out and they're like, I saw a velociraptor, which that would be a really fun story.
It's just a chicken. Yeah, it's easy to get them mixed up, actually.
Because we've talked about, you know, time slips before.
Yeah, man.
Who's to say that this ancient dinosaur didn't slip out of existence and into this tiny little town in the 1900s?
So true. I love this idea. A mashup of a previous episode. The idea that a portal could open up in the middle of nowhere and a dinosaur slips out.
Yeah.
And into 1900s Iowa.
I guess there's some questions about the bright light and bullets not affecting it. Because if Jurassic Park has taught me anything, it's bullets can affect dinosaurs.
Yes.
Not the T-Rex, but some of the smaller ones.
I didn't even consider T-Rex. That's another possibility, which I don't want to get into because we've got too many as it is. I should say, as an addendum here, there's always the possibility of a hoax, right? In all paranormal cases.
Sure.
But I would like to note that in an old newspaper article written about the Van Meter visitor, it talks a lot about how the locals were pretty pissed off about this whole affair. They were annoyed that it happened. They were annoyed the visitor caused so much disruption. And they were annoyed that they got the reputation for this thing happening and such a crazy thing happening. And they just wanted to move on and get past it. A far cry from many of the other kind of things that happen to small towns, and they just run with it and try and make a buck out of it. I think there is now, of course, a festival commemorating the visitor.
Granted, yeah.
But it started in 2013, over 100 years after the actual event.
Okay, that's fair. It wasn't like 3 weeks later.
No.
They were like, welcome to Thunderbird City, home of the visitor.
If you knock on the bricks at the mine, you can hear it squawk.
Only $3 a knock.
So, Rory, I feel I have overloaded you with possibilities for what the Van Meter Visitor is, but we got to decide whether it's truly paranormal or not. What do you think today?
Glad to have the options. I appreciate the research that went into this. And you know I'm a sucker for a good cryptid story, especially one that could possibly involve a mythological Pokemon, a legendary Pokemon.
I don't think I ever said that. I don't think I said that.
Lightning Bird does imply the existence of Ice Bird.
Okay.
And Firebird.
That, well, that would have to be a different podcast, I think.
Which I also like and I'm very interested in. I think the problem that we have with this episode, which we have with a lot of our cryptid episodes, is the physical evidence. You know, I think even when we did the case of the Lizard Man, a very unbelievable story, we still had the cement plaster. We still had the cement casts of its prints that it left in the dirt. Even though we didn't have any photographs. But in this case, we don't even have the prints that were allegedly made by the town badass.
It's true.
So there's kind of, even though there's a lot of lore and theories around what the creature is, there's very little physical evidence to help us with today's case.
And frustratingly, the physical evidence may exist locked away in a creepy old mine in Iowa to this very day.
So if that's what we have to do to find out whether or not this thing exists or not, then maybe that's what we will have to do on a bonus episode. Crack into the old mine and see for ourselves.
Mr. Biden, tear down that wall.
Build a wall!
He was waiting for the second someone give it a chance.
That'd be great. After years of petitioning, you finally get the town to tear down the wall. You remove one brick and there's just an eye peeking out. Whoa! Put it back in. Until that wall has been taken down, unfortunately, I just don't have enough evidence to say that this exists. So I'm going to have to do a no this week, unfortunately.
I think it will have to be a double no, the case of the Van Meter Visitor. I would love to hear from anyone in this area who's maybe heard of this legend, maybe gone down near the creepy old mine that's been bricked up, and maybe, hell, chipped away at a couple bricks just to see what's up.
Get a little peek, sure. I can't believe no one has tried removing the bricks yet.
Someone's got to have.
Right, yeah.
But better them than me, I think. I'll research the story from my cozy, cozy living room. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode about the Van Meter Visitor. Fantastic story. Thank you so much.
Wonderful.
To Amy Grisdale for researching that one.
For guesting on the podcast. I actually sure. don't think...
Not going to protest that.
At the end, we were always like, thank you, Cammy, our editor. Thank you, Amy, for doing all the research. But like, you know, when is it ever like, thank you, Rory, for like the jokes and like the insight that you brought to the podcast.
I feel like you get the thanks through kind of the success of the show and the, you know, the followers and kind of the nice messages you receive from the listeners.
Yeah, I don't really
and know. We do get financial support from Patreon too, so that's kind of like a pretty tangible little thank you.
It's like, sure, whatever, all that's like fine. But when does everyone just go, thanks, Rory? Another great episode,
I think,
Rory.
Every time we record, I usually go, thanks, man, for coming over and doing a great podcast.
Just, yeah.
Like, I thank you every time.
It's just, you know, it doesn't mean anything coming from you because yeah. I don't think about you as someone who's like important or anything. So I want it from somebody famous.
Tell me what you really think, Rory.
I want someone famous to say it just for once in my life.
So I'm confused because you got annoyed that I thanked our researcher, inferred that you wanted thanks, and then said it wouldn't mean shit coming from me because I'm not famous.
And actually, Cammy and Amy feel the same way.
Really?
Yeah, we have a WhatsApp group without you in it, and we were all agreed. It was just like, f*** this kit guy. We should start our own thing.
This is so weirdly candid of you. You usually beat around the bush an awful lot more. You just said you don't care what I think, and we all agree, f*** this kit guy.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So we're gonna do like our own podcast, and then
this is how you're telling me.
I just felt like I wanted like the audience to be a part of it.
Why?
So
why would you want them to be a part of a coup?
They're
it's a fucked up thing to want them to be a part of.
So everyone, tune in to
no, absolutely not. You don't get to end the podcast.
tune into our other podcast.
Do you know what it is yet?
Yeah, I've got a pretty good idea. It's called... Hold on, let me bring
you're clearly thinking so hard about this.
No, we have it in an email. Sorry, I just got to go through the email chain. Cammy said, fuck it. Amy said, who does he think he is?
So it doesn't sound like there's been any brainstorming about the...
We haven't quite got to the podcast. The point of the show yet.
Have they even agreed to do the podcast with you yet?
Yeah, no, they have. Oh my God. I'm out.
It's just them?
They booted me out, bud. I can't believe that they... I mean, obviously, it's good that, like, you know, we're still a team together. And, like, that's cool because, you know, I always respected the work that we did together.
Hold up. I just got an email.
No. No.
F*** that Rory guy is the subject line.
No. Don't read any... Block them.
We trolled him like the little bitch he is.
No.
He's out, you're in.
Oh my God, this can't be happening.
I mean, my instinct is to be appalled because I thought we were hiring them, but I actually feel pretty special to be included again. So,
no, but
fuck it, I'm in.
No! What about us, the show?
All right, everyone, stop listening. Unfollow, unsubscribe, unfollow Rory on all platforms. Follow the new podcast. No idea what it's called. I guess I'll have to link it below. I appreciate this podcast ending seems a little chaotic, but rest assured, by the time this goes live, the dust will have settled and someone will be on top, and I hope it's me. If you can't get enough of this paranormal life, investigations into all things paranormal, check out patreon.com, because on patreon.com/thisparanormallife, you can get access to basically a calendar year's worth of podcasts. I think there's 40 something full length episodes. Investigations into the paranormal, the too hot for TV content that we cannot share here on the main feed. And this month is a great month to check out the Patreon because our most recent bonus episode was all about haunted Disneyland, all the f***ed up dark side shit that has ever gone down at Disneyland. It was one of my favorite episodes we've recorded. Super fun. And that's available along with 40 plus other full length episodes for as little as $5.
But Kit, what if I want this Paranormal Life merchandise, but I don't know how to use Patreon?
We have a new merchandise store over on thisparanormallife.com. We have a US store and a UK and Europe store. So you can get This Paranormal Life official merchandise shipped to you fast, as cheap as possible, and made with very high quality product. No sweatshop labor or none of that. Rory, tell them what kind of t-shirts you can get.
Oh, Jesus. You can get This Paranormal Life logo t-shirts.
Oh, yeah.
Beautiful, pristine, crisp shirts. You can also get Chompies, everyone's favorite breakfast cereal. We've got Chompies branded t-shirts in multiple styles, so definitely go check it out. And we'll have, can we say this? Can we say we've got a new design coming soon? Kind of soon?
The new podcast that I'm starting with Cammy and Amy, the merchandise will also be available in this Paranormal Life store.
We're piggybacking off their Shopify.
No, you're absolutely right. There is a new design pretty imminently, actually.
Yeah, we'll have updates soon. So, yeah, stay tuned.
You can always find out what's new in the world of this Paranormal Life by checking out our socials, all of the links to which are in the description of this podcast. Just swipe up, check it out. Like I say, thank you so much for tuning in to this week's episode of This Paranormal Life. We will, of course, be back next Tuesday with a brand new paranormal tale.
Bye-bye!
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.